Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and joining me today is Jenny, who is our PAT expert naturopath based in Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jess.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia in Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So today we're going to be talking about one of the most common food chemical intolerances we see in our clinics, called salicylate intolerance, and the biological process that is a major underlying driver of salicylate intolerance and is actually also associated with reactions to histamine, some amines, and even chlorine. So Jenny, could you start us off by explaining what salicylates actually are?
Sure. So many people with allergies and intolerances and sensitivities we'll probably be quite familiar with the food chemical salicylates, as they're quite a common reaction for these people. But many of them might not be aware of the connection that they have with sulfate and phenols and how that has a direct impact on your symptoms. So this is probably a recap for some of you that know about salicylates, but here's kind of a breakdown of what these substances are. So phenols are a group of food chemical compounds found in plants, and salicylates are a specific type of phenol. And they act as a natural pesticide and protect the plants from insects, fungi, bacterial invasions and disease. So they are present in lots of fruits and vegetables, especially if they're unripe and in the skin. And they're in vegetables, nuts, spices, herbs, jam, honey, tea, coffee, yeast extracts, beer, wine, and natural flavorings. So as you can see, that's a really broad amount of foods and substances that they're in. So they're also in processed and packaged foods. And those phenols are synthetically produced. So the manufacturers add them to artificially flavor, color, or lengthen the shelf life. They can also be found in perfumes, bath and beauty products, and they're really easily absorbed through the skin. They're also commonly found in cleaning products, washing powders, botanical oils, and medications. So as you can see, it's in so much stuff. And phenols and salicylates can also be beneficial to our bodies. You know, the fruits and the vegetables that contain salicylates are really strong antioxidants, and they also can help reduce pain and inflammation, which is why they're the basis of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin.
Yeah, so we actually send a comprehensive list of foods containing salicylates in our food chemical intolerance EPAC. So that's available via our website, but I'll also put a link to that in our episode notes for anyone who's interested in finding out more. But yeah, they really are so prevalent in our diets and in so many products. It's no surprise that it's one of the most common substances we address first as part of a PAT consultation. So Jenny, what are the common symptoms of a reaction to salicylate or salicylate intolerance?
So the symptoms of a phenol salicylate sensitivity vary a lot from person to person, and they can mimic other conditions, which is why it's really hard to pinpoint it, or why if you went to a doctor, they wouldn't necessarily find that or say that. So it's not tested with medical allergy tests like a skin prick test or a RAS. So this often can fly under the radar. So the symptoms of salicylate intolerance can involve any body system, and it varies widely from person to person. So symptoms can seem to flare up randomly, which can make them tricky to pinpoint or manage. And this is because symptoms will only flare up once you surpass your individual threshold of tolerance. So it's like a glass of water that's slowly getting topped up with the dropper, and then it eventually overflows, and then that's when you get a symptom picture. And so since the salicylates are so prevalent in our diets, and especially really healthy diets, it can make it really confusing for people when they feel like they've been doing the right thing and they've cleaned up their diet, but they're still reacting to everything. So there's physical and behavioral issues that can occur when people react to them. So the physical symptoms can be headaches, hives, eczema, changes in skin color, especially around the mouth or the cheeks or the ears, sinus symptoms of a runny or a blocked nose, sinus infections, nasal or sinus polyps, and asthma, gut symptoms of abdominal pain, colitis, diarrhea, inflammation. And what's really interesting is that phenol cell membranes are also made up of fat and water, so they can easily cross the blood-brain barrier and access the brain. So the behavioral side, there can also be reactions. And this is seen with hyperactivity, mood swings, irritability or aggression, repetitive body movements or noises, which is commonly called stimming, laughing at inappropriate times, and night waking. So it's huge.
Yeah, and I really feel for people when they're getting these seemingly random flare-ups. It just makes it so confusing and frustrating to try and work out what's going on with your body. So could you explain why people with salicylate intolerance experience this tolerance threshold compared to like a classic allergic reaction to pollen, for example, where you get symptoms like sneezing relatively instantly?
Yes, so this is the fascinating part. So this is because salicylates are detoxified from the body via a biological process called the sulfation pathway. So this occurs in the liver, and the sulfation pathway processes also histamine from foods, histamine produced by your immune system, and certain types of amines, including tyramine in mature cheese and phenylalanine in chocolate. So there's this accumulation of salicylates that occurs because your sulfation pathway isn't working optimally. So this can cause the reactions to develop in sensitive people, and the tolerated amount varies from person to person. And also some foods are higher in salicylates than others. So to get to that threshold point, it's really hard to figure out, because you could be eating, it can take up to 4 days sometimes for these reactions to occur. And so you might not be able to figure it out unless you knew what things had salicylates in them. You wouldn't know that you're getting this huge amount building up in your body.
Yeah, and I guess with that delay, you can have an experience where you eat one food one day and you don't have a reaction, and then you eat it the next day and it causes a big flare-up. So that's also explained by this kind of tolerance threshold concept as well. So what happens when someone's sulfation pathway is not working optimally?
So how it works is sulfate attaches to phenols, like the salicylates, to assist in detoxification, but our bodies first need to make the sulfate. And so this involves using protein, which converts to sulfite and then converts the sulfite to sulfate. So to make the sulfate, we need protein, molybdenum, magnesium, zinc, omega-3 fatty acids, and the vitamins B1, B2, B5, B6. So if you've got any gut issues, like leaky gut or absorption issues, and you're low in certain vitamins and minerals, it's also going to make this harder for them to process. And then there's this enzyme called, I'm not very good at pronouncing things, but the it's basically PST, and then it transports the sulfate to its final destination, which attaches the sulfate to the phenols and salicylates to flush them out. So if you're not a good sulfate producer and you don't produce enough for the sulfation pathway to clear what you're consuming, then you get this accumulation, which then causes the reactions to develop. And it's quite a wordy, big thing, but if you want to read over this, it goes with a transfer, this, doesn't it? So people can read.
Yes.
So you can read over this part, because it might be a little bit big. So also the condition Gilbert syndrome is when your body produces too much bilirubin, which also indicates a poor sulfate production or transport, which means it's harder to metabolize these phenols and salicylates. And so you might also react to them if you have that particular syndrome. You can also be low in this enzyme PST, and that is usually a result of low levels of the sulfate in the body, not because this enzyme is defective. Interestingly, research by Dr. Rosemary Waring at the University of Birmingham, she found that children on the autistic spectrum have low levels of this enzyme PST and low levels of the sulfate.
Yeah, so basically the sulfation pathway's job is to package up these phenols or salicylates and help the body transport them out. So what causes someone's sulfation pathway to not work optimally, and how does this actually lead to salicylate intolerance or sensitivity?
Yeah, so some people are actually genetically susceptible to phenol sensitivity, as the Suex gene produces another enzyme called sulfite oxide. And this converts the sulfites into sulfate in the body. But if the gene is mutated, it can impact on the functioning of this enzyme, which decreases the sulfate and can lead to this PST deficiency. It's also known that artificial food dyes and food preservatives like sulfites and glycophosphate, which is commonly used as a herbicide called Roundup, these all actually impair the sulfation pathway. And although since sulfation pathway requires enough sulfate to attach to the phenols or salicylates to detoxify them, any food or chemical that requires or uses up sulfate will put the extra pressure on this process. And so things then can build up and cause these reactions to develop. So like we said earlier, the sulfation pathway also processes the histamines from the foods, the histamine produced by our immune system and certain types of amines in food. But there are other substances that use up sulfate too. So for example, when people are exposed to mold, they can develop an intolerance to high salicylate foods, especially if their gut health is compromised. And this is because the mold toxins and the salicylates use the same sulfation pathway to detoxify both of the substances. And they are both also use the antioxidant glutathione to help the body do this. So if your body has been exposed to mold and its mycotoxins, it can use up a lot of these stores of the sulfate and the glutathione to detoxify the mold. So then there may not be enough for the salicylate detoxification as well. So and to further exacerbate the problem, the salicylates are a potent depleter of this glutathione. So there's less available in the body overall. So it's this vicious cycle that causes these reactions. And then there's another example, which is chlorine, which we obviously consume in our drinking water, and it's also easily absorbed by the skin in swimming pools and a spa or even tap water, you know, in a shower. So it's also detoxified by the same sulfation pathway, and this is why chlorine reactions are so common in sensitive people, and why some kids, when they get out of the pool, can be really cranky and, you know, like from an emotional behavioral point of view, can actually be reacting, and it's actually because of this whole sulfate pathway. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics, they did a study on the effects of chlorine and on nearly 1,000 children and found that chlorine impacted the immune system of all the children. So depending on where they were, if they had allergies or asthma or behavior, it actually affected them on some level, all of it, which is it's crazy. And then also, lastly, if you have gut issues on top of the sulfation pathway issues, like something like candida or a leaky gut, the phenol and the salicylate particles are able to repeatedly enter the bloodstream, which puts additional pressure on the sulfation pathway.
And I guess that also explains why these reactions are becoming more and more common, because it seems a bit counterintuitive that we're reacting to these seemingly healthy foods, but as our toxin exposure, it just keeps increasing as we're with modern lifestyles. So it's very interesting to see that these seemingly unrelated substances are actually connected by this pathway.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this will help people put two and two together when they're struggling to work out what's going on and why they're reacting to these random things. So now that we have a good understanding of how salicylate intolerance can come about, how can PAT help manage the symptoms of salicylate intolerance?
Yeah, so like you said earlier, salicylates is one of the most common reactions that we see in the clinic, and it can be really implicated in various symptoms associated with eczema, asthma, IBS, and even brain fog and headaches. So we're all qualified naturopaths who use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to assess your reactions to various food chemicals like the salicylates, the amines, histamine, as well as lots of other food, airborne, and chemical substances. So how the muscle testing works is that you hold onto a sample vial of the substance, and we're looking for a change in your muscle strength or to indicate a reaction. So if the muscle in your arm stays strong, that shows that your body is okay with that. But if your muscle weakens, then it indicates there's a reaction to the substance. So then we use a chiropractic tool called the AcuStim to stimulate the nerve bundles and acupressure points down either side of your spine. And so while you're holding onto that sample, we are retraining your body to no longer have this negative reaction to the substance. So most clients find that following a PAT session for salicylates, their tolerance threshold significantly increases. So they can handle, you know, way more of them. And even some can get complete relief from their symptoms. So Salicylates is often a part of our PAT treatment plan for various skin issues, digestive symptoms, and even respiratory issues. So also to help prevent the reactions from redeveloping again in the future, you should really be looking at supporting the sulfation pathway and to prevent this accumulation causing these issues again.
Yes, so we actually did a whole episode about positive association technique, or PAT, recently, where we go into a lot more depth about how this technique works. So I'll also pop a link to that in our show notes. So to wrap things up, what are some of the ways that we can support our sulfation pathway?
Yes, so one really easy way to support your sulfation pathway at home is to bathe in Epsom salts or use magnesium oil topically, as they both contain magnesium sulfate. So we can take advantage of our skin's absorbency, and the sulfate part of the molecule is absorbed through the skin, which can help increase our overall sulfate levels. So this is a great idea for kids when they have been in the pool or in the spa, especially those ones that, you know, have the behavioral problems. If you just put them in an Epsom salt bath, if you have a bath after swimming, it really will help them to process it out. When you're doing this, it's important to just start with a small amount and build up slowly, especially if you're very sensitive, because if you detoxify too quickly, it can cause other symptoms. You also want to be trying to avoid other environmental toxins that can put pressure on the sulfation pathway, such as chlorine and mold, as much as you can. So you can reduce your chlorine exposure by drinking filtered water and getting a shower that filters the chlorine out of your tap water. You also might want to address any mold issues that you have in your home. We did a blog post all about mold, and it's got great tips on dealing with it, which you can find on our website if you want to have a read of that. It's also worth connecting with a naturopath who can look into correcting any deficiencies in the vitamins and minerals we talked about earlier that are needed to make the sulfate, and address any underlying leaky guts or candida issues that are allowing the phenols and the salicylates to enter into the bloodstream, putting, you know, more pressure on the sulfation pathway.
Yeah, so they're all really good tips, Jenny. I'm an allergy prone and sensitive person myself, so I personally have the water filter set up in the office. I use a shower filter at home, and I've also just started using magnesium oil at bedtime. And one of the reasons is I don't have a bathtub at my house, so this is a and it's also meant to be good with sleep and things like that too. So if there's any listeners out there who are struggling with reactions to salicylates or these other food chemicals, and you want to learn more about positive association technique, we do have clinics all over Australia as well as Auckland, New Zealand. So you can find more information and book online via our website at naturalallergytreatment.com.au. Otherwise, we have some really exciting episodes coming up. The next one we're looking at is mast cell activation syndrome, which is going to be a really big topic. So make sure you subscribe to our channel. And we'd also love it if you could forward this episode onto anyone who is struggling with similar issues. So thanks for today, Jenny. That was really interesting.
Oh, great. Thanks, Jess.